Now, how was it determined that you ended up in the Air Force?
I was attached. I went to Aberdeen Proving Grounds, Aberdeen, Maryland.
Okay.
Aberdeen Proving Grounds. And that was ordnance. Then they give me some training in there, just basic training on some stuff, on some big guns, and then some ammunition and stuff like that. Then they shipped me from there down to New Orleans. And from New Orleans, I shipped out to Panama. When I got down there, I was unloading bombs from a railway car. And
Active bombs, like loaded?
They didn't have the things attached to them yet.
Have the detonator?
Yeah, they had everything except the detonator.
I
unloaded those things, and then they shipped me to Albrook Field to be attached to this air command thing.
Where's Albrook Field at?
Well, that's on...
is it in Panama or is it that state?
Panama, Colon side, C-O-N, Colon side. And I taught small arms ammunition to the guys that were flyers and stuff like that was in the Air Corps.
When did you know that you were going to be part of the Air Force, specifically?
I wasn't down there any time at all until they attached me.
Okay.
Ordnance is attached to other outfits, see, because they furnish guns and ammunition and stuff like that. So I was attached to the Air Force for that purpose. And then they had the machine guns, like the 50s and the 30 calibers were put into those airplanes down there.
Right.
And that's what the our attachment set up. They did that. They put those in and they cleaned the guns and stuff like that and taught how to field strip the 50s and the 30s and the 45s and they had those bigger guns, 37.5 millimeter, something like that. But
Was there any particular thing that you had or like a quality you had that kept you from just being deemed Army and basically being shipped off to the front lines?
No, I was attached to this outfit, and this outfit moved into the interior when I was first down there. We moved into an interior which was called La Jolla, and we had these bomb trucks that would take these things and load them into P-40s and P-38s.
Yes, okay.
And they had what they call revetments, and you'd take these bombs and put them in these areas here that was called revetments.
Like a gathering area?
Yeah. Gathering area. And that's when I first learned how to back up a truck, a semi-truck.
Oh, I'm sure of that.
You load those bomb trucks on there, and you had to cut them a different way.
Oh, man, yeah.
It was really something. But it was interesting, and then.
Now, at what point did you end up? You were a sergeant at one point, right?
Yeah.
You started a private?
Yeah. I was down there probably 2 years before I ever made sergeant.
And what ended up causing you to make sergeant or whatever?
The ratings just came out. Didn't make any difference whether you knew anything or not. When the ratings come out, you were there, you got the thing. You could be a genius if the ratings weren't there, you wouldn't get them. I really felt sorry for some of them guys. Some of those guys were really whizzes, and they didn't have enough ratings in their outfit, you know, to make.
And as far as like ratings. Can you explain that a little? What it dealt with a little bit?
You started out. You have a table of organization, a TO, and they had so many people
that were officers.
That were officers and sergeants and corporals and PFCs and stuff like that. And then they had different jobs to do besides clerks and running the laundry and all that.
Right.
Stuff.
Sure.
But some of the doggone table of organizations, they had so many more people than they had things to give out,
right,
that they didn't get them. And no matter, intelligence wasn't the thing at all. It was just, if you were lucky enough to be there when the doggone things were put out, you got it.
Right.
But,
so now you became a sergeant, you said a couple of years into it, into your service. How many years were you totally in the service?
I think about 3 years and 8 months.
Almost 4 years.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so you were down in Panama. And
I think I got out at 45.
Okay. And so you were working and doing this thing. Now, did your job change, like, when you became sergeant? Did you
same stuff.
Same stuff, just new title and
that's right.
More and more responsibility.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. And that was pretty much what you did for 3 years?
Yeah.
Okay, and then what happened at that point?
Well, everybody was wanting to go what they call casual. After you'd been down there so long, they would rotate you, you know. If you were down there like 3 years, well, you could get on a casual list, which means that you'd be transferred to another outfit and then retransferred someplace else. Well, we were lucky enough to get transferred to Miami Beach, Florida.
Okay.
When we went casual, although that was a racket. And then some of those guys down there were reshipped to Germany and reshipped to Japan. But
wow.
I was lucky enough to get there when they were winding down. They just finished giving up at Germany.
Right, right. So so it wasn't a hot day anymore.
Then we were sweating out Japan, you know.
Right.
And just about the time we were sweating out getting transferred again, well, that's when they dropped the bomb on Japan.
Right, and then that called it all. Yeah,
yeah.
Sure. Exactly.
But,
now, see, you were in Miami Beach. What'd you primarily do in Miami Beach?
Well, we were supposed to handle operational fatigue cases. These guys that had
done
a lot of bombing over Pulaski oil fields and stuff like that. And after they ran so many missions, they would be in bad shape. And they were shipped down to Miami Beach, and those guys could go in any time and get anything to eat, sleep as long as they wanted to. And then they had different things that we could do. They wanted to walk the beach, a lot of them, especially from Japan.
Yeah.
Just were down to skin and bones. And those guys, all they did was eat and walk the beach to get back to weight, you know.
Yeah.
But some of them guys I were with, there were two or three Texans that I were with that liked to shoot skeet, and I was instructing skeet there for about a year and a half or so.
How did you end up instructing skeet?
Well, I was in ordnance, and I knew how to take the guns apart and put them back together.
Okay.
And I had enough background after that, so they put me in with the shotguns and was teaching these. Some of them Texans were tough, too. I mean, you could shoot
25 shots you get, and you get so many shots at each position. You got like a low house and a high house, and you got two or three or four places in between.
Right.
So you're shooting from different positions. Then you holler pull, and the bird goes out. And
and
you shoot it or miss it.
Now, were you doing like the clay pigeon thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Yeah. Okay.
So we did that for about a year, year and a half. That was really a racket. Those guys really got a kick out of that. But
and most of the people that were with you were these operational fatigue people.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
some of those guys snapped out of it, some of them didn't. Just sometimes you could go by there at night and hear them guys hollering and screaming. Boy, they really took a beating, some of those guys did.
Sure.
And then some of them just snapped out of it no time at all. On the outside. I don't know what they were on the inside, but...
And then, okay, so your time was up there. Did you get papers at some point in time that said, your time's up, you're done here?
Well, when,
or did you get shipped out someplace else?
When they declared peace
when Japan surrendered.
Then we got our orders at Miami Beach to be shipped back home. And we were given separation pay that we could either use a train to go back or automobile or however we wanted to.
Was it substantial pay or was it just kind of piddly?
I forget what it was, several hundred dollars.
Which back then would have been enough.
$300 or $400 anyhow. And it was separation pay.
Do you remember what you did with yours?
Well, mostly I blew it in having a good time.
Yeah. I just want to, I mean, I know that's normal.
But I had sent home money that that I wanted to use, you know, to buy an automobile. And,
sent it home to mom?
Yeah.
To your, I mean, your mom.
Yeah,
to grandma.
And I had some of that at home. But I came home, there was a sergeant who was a friend of a captain that we had known when we were down in Panama. And they lived in Tullahoma, Tennessee. So we came back that way. And then one of them lived at Cincinnati. So
you guys all were in a car?
We were all in a car and then came back with this captain. And I think he was the one that lived in Cincinnati. And this guy lived in Tullahoma, Tennessee. We're going past that area. And he said, you don't want to go down this area here. He said, the revenue or so gets you. He said, they got all kind of moonshine down
there. Oh, bad, yeah.
But,
now, was it your car or was it somebody else's car?
It was the captain's car.
It was the captain's car.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But,
so you were along for the ride.
Yeah, just went along to get home.
Now, you said at one point in time you made a stop in San Diego someplace. I think you told me that before.
Well, we were coming back to... when we were coming back home, we came back on a landing craft. What do they call them? LSDs or something like that. LSDs, I don't know. But anyway, they were like a cork. I think I was 13 days coming back from Panama City to San Diego.
Okay.
From the Pacific, and I never so sick in all my life. I was on that darn thing, and I think I was sick 12 days of the 14 or 13
man.
We were on it.
And what they did landed, you do? How'd you eat anything?
Well,
you
just,
had it, right?
you're up on a doggone deck, and you just laid there and gagged and heaved, and finally, I think after about 8 or 9 days, it's hard to remember.
You just got used to it.
You had to eat something, so you finally kept something down. But boy, and half of the doggone sailors on that thing were sick. When you get on a craft like that and you hit rough water in the ocean, especially Pacific.
Which you did. Did you hit like a storm or anything?
Yeah. It was really brutal.
And they didn't distribute Dramamine to the...
I don't think they even knew what Dramamine was.
Man, that was
we come to San Diego, and so from there we went down to Riverside, which is real close there,
right,
to San Diego.
Sure, know exactly where it is.
And then we came via... It was like a cattle car. It was terrible. That thing didn't have any air conditioning. It was an old beat-up car that they had probably from World War One.
Train?
Yeah, train.
And where'd you go from Riverside?
From Riverside, we took that thing up through Carson City.
Right, Nevada.
And through all those crazy towns I can't think of now, and we ended up in Atterbury, Indiana.
Okay.
And from Atterbury, Indiana, we were shipped down by a nice train down to Miami Beach.
Okay, so that's how you got, so you came from Panama to San Diego, then rode the cattle car to Indiana, and then got a decent train to Miami. And then when your time was done at Miami, you took a car...
Well, when we were in Miami, we first got down there, they said, well, you got to know how to take care of these operational fatigue cases that had taken such a beating.
Yeah.
So they sent us up to Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay.
And
for how long? Do you remember?
I think it was only about 8 weeks, and they were teaching us how to handle these guys with kid gloves and everything.
Well, no, was that a military base you were at or something in Nashville, or what was it?
I don't remember what the heck it was. It was just an interim thing here to learn how to.
I mean, where did you train at a hospital, or did you have a doctor?
It must have been a hospital. I remember that's where I had an impacted tooth, molar tooth.
Ooh.
When I was at that Nashville. And I can still remember that guy using that hammer to loosen that darn thing up with, like it took my head off.
Oh, my goodness.
It was brutal. Then we went and they shipped us.
So they didn't numb you up or anything? You just...
Well, they numbed you, but, you know, even then.
Yeah.
And, oh, that thing, I bled like a hog. It was awful. It was...
Oh, God.
But I remember the tea dances. Those tea dances we had at Nashville, Tennessee, were really, really nice. Before I had my my tooth. Why they'd go to these tea dances and.
Was it a wisdom tooth or something that was impacted?
Oh yeah. It was a wisdom tooth.
Yeah, because that's what I had to deal with that years ago on my bottom ones.
Yeah.
You know, there was a pain. There was a tissue impaction. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they went into a side tooth somewhere and they got tangled up
and stuff.
Chiseled that darn thing. It went brutal.
Okay, so you went back down to Miami, then you're done.
Yeah.
You got finished with your.
Well, then we did the teaching those guys how to shoot skis.
Okay, right.
And
then you came back up to Columbus,
And we had a lot of good times down there on the beach and
On
our own time. We had the singe binges and the dances and it was great. We guys were in the service. We used to beat up our caps so we looked like we might have been airmen and was flying, you know.
Yeah.
We'd say, we're going to take another mission across the causeway.
Yeah.
Miami across the causeway.
So you never had to shoot at anybody or anything like that?
No, I don't know.
You were pretty far removed from action as far as I guess.
The only thing we run into was the Panamanians every while. Every once in a while they'd get upset with us and they would want to shoot the whole bunch of GIs downtown, and they took care of it real quick, but we didn't come close to shooting it. They had a scare one time. They thought there was planes running over the doggone mainly we were sent down there, you know, have those balloons over the canal.
So
if somebody came in or they wouldn't bomb the canal.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the reason we're in there, and the planes that we fixed with everything, were to protect that canal.
Right.